You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
One of my favorite books when I was a kid that I read it in seventh grade English for the first time, was To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Great book, great story. You probably know the story. It's the story of two siblings, a sister and a brother, growing up in the 1930s in the little town of Macomb, Alabama. And the story, the book, is written from the perspective of the little girl. Her name is Jean Louise Finch, and her nickname is Scout. And she's 6 years old at the beginning of the book, and her brother Jim is 10 years old. And their father's name is Atticus Finch, who is this well-respected man in the little town that they live in. But Scout and Jim tend to think of their dad as kind of wimpy, kind of unimpressive. They're not so openly impressed with their father. In fact, I thought I'd share with you a few of Scout's words about her dad in the beginning of the book. This is what she says about her father. She calls him Atticus. She calls him by his first name. She says, "Atticus was feeble. He was nearly 50. When Jim and I asked why he was so old, he said he just got started late, which we felt reflected upon his abilities and his manliness. He was much older than the parents of our school contemporaries, and there was nothing that Jim or I could say about him when our classmates would say things like, 'Well, my father, dot, dot, dot.' Jim was football crazy. Atticus was never too tired to play keep away, but when Jim wanted to tackle him, Atticus would say, 'I'm too old for that, son.' Our father didn't do anything. He worked in an office, not in a drugstore. Atticus didn't drive a dump truck for the county. He was not the sheriff. He didn't farm. He didn't work in a garage. He didn't do anything that could possibly arouse the admiration of anyone. And besides that, he wore glasses." Right? This was Scout's assessment of her father. As the story unfolds, most of you know it, we learn that Atticus is anything but wimpy and unimpressive. He is this strong, this wise, this good man. This man who does the right thing, even when it's difficult. This man who is always under control, even when it seems like life is coming unraveled around him. And there's something about Atticus that provides a stability and a security for Jim and for Scout, even when they don't recognize it. I think deep down, as I was thinking about Atticus, I was thinking that deep down, every kid wants to know that their dad not only loves them and has their best interest in mind, but he's in control. He's got a handle on things when life gets tough. I remember when I was growing up, my dad always seemed to be under control and seemed to know how life worked. You could feel the difference when my dad got home at the end of the day. There was just a weight about his presence when he was in the house, even when he wasn't trying to be that way. Because there's something about a father, isn't there? As we get to John chapter 14, as we've been studying the Gospel of John, we come to a point in the story where life seems to be coming unraveled for the disciples of Jesus. They're having this meal with Jesus that we've talked about the last couple of weeks, and they're sitting around a table, and Jesus is talking to them. But Jesus keeps talking now about leaving them, about going away. And he's saying really strange things, like, "One of y'all are going to betray me. One of you are going to deny me. All of you are going to bail on me." He's saying weird stuff like that, and he keeps alluding to his own departure, his own death. And this, you know, they feel like they're about to get left behind. They feel like they're about to get abandoned. It's troubling to them. I was reading an article this week in the Wall Street Journal, and the name of the article is Guatemala's Stranded Orphans, and which is near and dear to many of us who've been recently to Guatemala. And the article is about how the moratorium on international adoption in the country of Guatemala has made it such that thousands of kids are now stranded in orphanages with no hope of ever having a family, because there's not a strong culture of adoption within the country of Guatemala. So more and more children are just growing up stranded there. without hope of having a father, without hope of having a mother. Most of them are well cared for in these orphanages, but they're abandoned. They won't have a family. And as I thought about that image of stranded orphans this week, it's how the disciples actually feel when we come to John chapter 14. They feel like they're going to get stranded in this messed up world, and the one who has seemingly most control over this messed up world is heading out. He's checking out and going somewhere else. And this is really troubling to them. And Jesus knows that. And so the first thing that Jesus does in John chapter 14 is he comforts them. He comforts them with words about a father. Because there's something about a father, especially when you feel like an orphan, isn't there? In John 14, the first 11 verses, which was just read to you, the Father is mentioned 11 times in those verses. 23 times in the chapter, the Father is mentioned, right? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that John chapter 14 is about the Father. And we've got to learn something about the Father there. Sinclair Ferguson, who's a theologian and a pastor, he says the fundamental way that a Christian ought to think of herself or himself when they think about who they are is as a child of God, right? In other words, we call God Father. And Ferguson says the conviction that we can speak of the maker of the universe in such intimate terms lies at the very heart of the Christian faith. So I want you to look at John 14. Look at verse 1 just for a moment. John 14, 1. Jesus says to his disciples, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me." And I want to pause for a second before we move on, just to just be amazed that in this moment, Jesus is taking time to look into the lives of the disciples and to comfort them, when on this night, out of all nights, they ought to be surrounding him with love and comfort and care. We read in chapter 12 and in chapter 13 that Jesus is deeply troubled at this time in his life, deeply troubled in his soul and his spirit. The cross is imminent, torture, betrayal, rejection, injustice right around the corner for him. And on this night, out of all nights, the disciples ought to be caring for him, but just the opposite is happening. He's looking deep into their souls and saying exactly the words that they need to hear. It's so challenging to me. Usually when I'm stressed, I just stress other people out. You know, I just vomit my stress and it sticks to other people. Jesus is not like that. He's always ministering to his people, always caring for them, even in this most distressing time in his life. Let me read that verse again, because in this verse, I think we have encapsulated kind of a summary of both the problem and the solution in our text today. He says, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me." So a couple of commands here. Don't let your hearts be troubled. And then believe. Believe in God. Believe also in me. And in these two commands, I think we see that we see the problem, and that is that they're troubled, and then we see the solution. He calls them to believe in, to trust in God the Father and his Son, Jesus. Now, I think there are a couple of things that they're troubled about. There's probably a myriad of things they're troubled about, but two that I see here. And both of these things relate to the fact that Jesus is leaving. He's going away. And the two things that the disciples are troubled about are the uncertain future and the unstable present, right? They're bothered about what the future, the unknown, uncertain future is, but they're also troubled about right now. What's going on right now? And into these two troubling things, Jesus speaks very specific things about the Father, and he calls them to believe them, because there's something about a Father that brings comfort to the lives of children. And so I want to look at these two things, because I think we can all relate to being anxious about both the future and the present. And so let's look at the future first, the uncertain future, starting in verse 2. Well, let me say this first. The future had been really bright for the disciples, right? They were kind of the A-team of Jesus' unit. Jesus had handpicked them, and I don't know if you can imagine how great it was to be handpicked by Jesus. I kept thinking this week about being on the playground as a kid, and when you're picking teams, and Jesus is like, "All right, I'll take John. All right, now give me Thaddeus. All right, I guess I'll take Peter, you know, and he's picking them. And just the honor and the privilege to be the varsity team. Their future looks bright. They're going to usher in the kingdom with the Messiah. And then all of a sudden, he starts talking about how he's leaving them, how he's going away. John 13:33, he says, I'm going to be with you only a little longer. You're going to look for me, but where I'm going, you can't come. This is really troubling to them. Check out the end of John 13, starting in verse 36. John 13:36. Peter comes up. Peter's sort of the team captain. And he comes up. He's going to get this question sorted out. And in verse 36 of John 13, Simon Peter says to Jesus, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus answered him, where I'm going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterward. And Peter said to him, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. So Peter's heart is in the right place. But we know what happens. We know that Peter is totally overestimating himself. See, Peter wants to be the kind of guy who would die for what he believes in. He longs to be the kind of guy that would lay down his life for his friends. And he's just not there yet. He's more bravado than he is actual bravery. He's not ready. And so Jesus very directly shows Peter his true self. Verse 38. Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me, Peter? Truly, truly, I say to you, the rooster will not crow till you have denied me three times. Peter, not only are you not going to die for me, but before morning gets here, you're going to deny three times that you even know who I am. That's what's going to happen. Why are the disciples troubled? Well, they might be the A team, but their head coach has just informed them that he is leaving. He's taking another assignment. And their star player has just been revealed in front of all of them is going to fail miserably. The future is real uncertain. The future of their mission is uncertain. This little hand-picked Bible study that they've been a part of for 3 years is now falling apart. Judas, who's one of them, has just left the room, possessed by Satan himself, no less, to go betray Jesus. Now they've just heard that their leader, the team captain, is really unreliable. And they're thinking, hey, if our leadership is this unreliable, what kind of unit have we signed on with here? What kind of outfit are we a part of? What are the hopes of the future of our mission? But also, I would say that the future of their relationship with Jesus is uncertain. And this is really troubling to them because they love him. He's their best friend in the world. They've spent 3 years together with him. There's no one they'd rather spend time with than Jesus. They've dropped everything. They've left everything in their lives to follow him. And now he's saying, I'm out of here. And they're thinking, I don't know if we'll ever see you again. And I was trying to capture in my own soul the emotion of what they might have been feeling this week. And for some reason, the image that kept coming back to me is a scene. You may have seen a scene like this at the airport where there's a mom and her kids saying goodbye to a soldier as he's being deployed, as he's leaving, right? And in that moment, it's like a gut-wrenching scene as this mom says goodbye to her husband. The kids say goodbye to their dad. That's the emotion of this moment. Jesus, will we ever see you again? This uncertain future. The disciples are troubled about the future. And so Jesus speaks very comforting words about the Father here. And he calls them to believe something very specific about the Father. He calls them to move from being troubled to trusting by believing or trusting in the promises of the Father that they have in Jesus. And it's promises about a very certain future, not an uncertain future. Look at verse 2. John 14:2. Jesus says, in my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go and prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again, and I will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. So what's Jesus promising? He's saying, my Father has a lot of real estate, right? And I'm going to him there. I'm going to prepare a place for you. Then I'm coming back. I'm going to get you. I'm going to take you, and we're going to spend eternity there together. And it's going to be awesome. And so what Jesus says to the disciples is your future includes, number one, a home, like a place that you belong forever. Your future includes a name, an identity, because you can call Father just like I call him Father because we're brothers and sisters. I'm your big brother, Jesus is saying. And because you have a name, you're a part of the family, you also have an inheritance. meaning all the wealth, all the riches of the fathers will belong to you someday. These are not the things that orphans have, right? Orphans don't have a home, a family, a name, an identity, an inheritance. Jesus is saying, I'm not going to strand you as orphans. Your future is certain, and it's a glorious future. Look at verse 4. And you know the way to where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? Jesus said, I'm the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I'm the way to the Father. Thomas interrupts, and I think Thomas is, you know, asking a question that they probably all were thinking, but he's a little overly simplistic in his understanding of what Jesus is saying, because he's saying, you're talking about going to the Father's house, but where is the Father's house, right? Because it's no point in talking about the way there if we don't actually know the address. We need a destination before we talk. We got to plug in, you know, an address into Google Maps before we can get the route. Where are we going? And Jesus is like, no, you don't understand. I am the way, Thomas. If you knew me, and you do know me, you would know the route to the Father. Get on me, follow me, and I will lead you into your certain future with the Father. And I kept thinking this week, for some reason, as I was reading this passage about those Fidelity investment commercials, you've seen these with the green line, the green arrow leading the investor into to a certain retirement future, right? And the investor walks out of the office, and all he's got to do is follow the green line. And one of the commercials that I've seen, the guy walks out of the investment office, he's following the green line down the sidewalk, and about a half a block into the walk, he gets totally distracted by these sports cars, these brand new sports cars in this shop window, and he starts thinking, I'm going to buy a sports car. And then the investment advisor leans out and calls out down the street, stay on the line. And he turns around and he's like, okay, thank you. And he starts walking along the line again. This is what Jesus is saying. He's saying, I am the line, stay on me. Like, don't get distracted by all the false ways out there to the Father, to a certain future that are going to tempt you. Stay on the line and follow me into a certain future with the Father. And the encouraging thing, the great news for you and I as Christians, is God is our Father too. We have a certain future, just like these guys do. Just as Jesus has laid it out here, our future, our destiny is eternity with the Father in his dwelling place. It's awesome. However, I imagine as Christians that most of the time when we think about the future, the thing that stresses us out is not eternity. It's not the thing we're worried about most. We're stressed out about next week, right? We're stressed out about the coming year. We're stressed out about tomorrow. We're not so concerned about the security of eternity, but we are concerned about the security of the near future. And so we're asking questions like, you know, how can I make ends meet in the current job that I have? We're asking questions like, where am I going to go to grad school? Or where am I going to go to college? How am I going to get into that place? How am I going to pay for it? When am I going to meet somebody and get married? What if my business fails? What if my health fails? What if my kid fails? What if my church fails? What if my job, you know, I lose my job? What about all the unknown? What about all the things I can't control and predict in the future? And those are the things that trouble us. But I want to ask you something. If the Father, who loves us so much, has done everything necessary to secure our eternal future with him, our long-term future, as Jesus spells it out here, don't you think that he has it within his means to control the near future? Like, if he has gone to all the trouble to secure a home for us, a name for us, an inheritance for us, don't you think he'll order the days ahead that make us so anxious? We just sang about it. Be still, my soul. Your God will undertake to guide the future just as he has undertaken to guide the past. See, Jesus said at one point to his friends, hey, look at the birds in the air. They don't sow, they don't reap, they don't gather food into the barn, but your heavenly Father, he feeds them. He takes care of them, and you're way more valuable than them. And then he says, so don't stop worrying about tomorrow. Don't be anxious about tomorrow. Trust in the promise of the Father who holds the future in his hands, the promises we have in Jesus. Now, the disciples are not only concerned about the future, they're also concerned about the present, the instability of the present moment, the now in their life. Look at verse 8. John 14, 8. Philip said to Jesus, Lord, show us the Father, and it's enough. It's enough for us. Just show us the Father like now, like right here. Right? See, they're glad about the promise of a future with the Father, but they need something more. They want to see the Father right now. Because you see, for a kid, you know, it's not just enough to know that they have a Father out there somewhere that they're going to see someday, and they're going to get all his stuff at some point. That doesn't bring the security and comfort that they need. You know, a little kid doesn't want to just know that they've got a father, but he's never around because he's off working hard somewhere, but he says to him, hey, don't worry, son, your college is going to be paid for someday. I know you never see me, but you're going to get a brand new car, and you're going to get all my stuff someday. A kid wants the presence of the Father now. That's where the security, the safety, the comfort resides. When my youngest daughter, Sophie, was little, when she was probably 3 years old, 4 years old, she had this thing that she would say to me, and she would say it every time I would leave, every time I'd go to work or, you know, just go run an errand even. And she would say, all right, bye, Daddy. Have fun. Come back. And she said it every time. Have fun. Come back. So it's like, Dad, I know you're leaving. Have fun out there doing whatever it is you do, but come back. Right? That's the important thing. Come back. Because a kid wants the presence of the Father. A kid wants the person, like now. And Jesus is leaving his disciples, and this throws this major curveball of instability into their life. They're already living in this unstable, broken world like we all do. And now, all of a sudden, they feel untethered. They feel abandoned. They feel stranded, honestly, like orphans. Who's going to guide them? Who's going to walk with them through this broken world? Who's going to provide for them, protect them, guard them, give them wisdom? The one who is the most stable person they've ever known is now leaving them, and the instability just kicks up a notch. So once again, Jesus speaks very comforting words to them. Once again, he calls them to believe something very specifically about the Father. He calls them now to trust in the presence of the Father that they have in Jesus. He's already called them to trust in his promises. Now that he says, trust in the presence of the Father that you have in me. Look at verse 9. Philip has said, you know, Lord, show us the Father, and it's enough for us. And Jesus said to him in verse 9, have I been with you so long and you still don't know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? And in our study of the Gospel of John up to this point, Frederick Dale Bruner says, we have not climbed any higher than this statement. Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. Because what he's saying is, whenever you're in the presence of Jesus Christ, you are in the presence of God. You are on holy ground in the presence of Jesus. Now, how is that possible? Jesus explains. Look at verse 10 and 11. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does his works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or else believe on account of the works themselves. So Jesus starts to speak of this mystical union of Father and Son. He starts saying, you know, I'm in the Father. The Father's in me. Then he says the Father dwells in me. Meaning, you guys were asking about an address for the Father. Well, here it is. He points to himself and he says, I'm the earthly address of the Father. This is where the Father has taken up residence. There is this mutual indwelling of Father and Son that's going on here, that's where they somehow maintain their distinction as two persons. There's still a distinct Father and a distinct Son, but they are eternally bound. They are eternally matched up, and they can't be separated. Jesus says, you know, just look at my words and my works. The very works that I do are the very works of the Father. The very words that I speak are the very words of the Father. No one else can say that about themselves. Whatever I say are the exact words of the Father. Whatever I do are the exact works of the Father. They are bound. They're in union. But here is the good news and the comforting words for the disciples and for us. Jesus actually invites them into this union of Father and Son. Look down at verse 16. Verse 16, Jesus says, "And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper, another counselor, to be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth." So this other helper or counselor is the Holy Spirit, God's Spirit, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him, for he dwells with you, and he will be in you. I will not leave you as orphans, not stranding you as orphans. I'll come to you yet a little while, and the world will see me no more, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. In that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. See how Jesus takes this union language and then applies it to his disciples and applies it to us as well. We're going to explore this idea of union in future weeks and develop it more and more. But suffice it to say that for now, what Jesus is promising is the very presence of the Father in them and with them by his Spirit. Like in the instability of their present situation, Jesus is saying, God the Father is with you by his Spirit. And so we need to ask ourselves, what troubles me? When you think about just your daily life, the present situation you're in, what troubles you? The Father is with you in the midst of it. When you're giving that difficult presentation at work, the Father is with you by his Spirit. When you need to have that difficult conversation with someone, the Father is with you by his Spirit. When you feel lonely, the Father is with you by his Spirit. When you find out a friend has cancer, the Father is with you. When you find out that you have cancer, the Father is with you. There can never be a situation that you encounter where the Father has deserted you or abandoned you. He is always with you everywhere by his Spirit. So when you and I are troubled by this unstable present world that we live in, Jesus is saying, hey, trust in the Father, the presence of the Father that you have through the Son, Jesus, and by his Spirit. See how that works? We have the presence of the Father mediated through the Son and made real to us by his Holy Spirit. It's glorious. Only Christianity promises that you can have immediate access to the immediate presence of the God of the universe, and at the same time, you can know for certain where you stand with him in the future. Isn't that amazing? We can know God as Father in the now, and we can be certain where we stand in the future. He takes care of both. Only in Christianity has a gracious Father sent his Son to make a way, to secure a way for us to be a part of his family, entrance into his family through the life, death, and resurrection of his Son. But also, only in Christianity has a gracious Father sent his Spirit so that we can experience him as Father right now. You can call God Father, not just metaphorically, but actually, experientially, you can know him in the present. He has provided for you in the present, and he has secured your future as only a good Father would. The end of To Kill a Mockingbird, if you remember the story, Scout, the little girl, and her brother Jim had been attacked by a bad guy in the story. And Jim had been hurt badly in this encounter. And the book ends with Atticus, the father, caring for Jim, who's been injured. And he is looking over him, looking out for him. And the book ends with the care, the control, the love, the gentleness of a father. And this is the last sentence in To Kill a Mockingbird. It says, after Atticus had tucked Scout into her bed, he turned out the light in her room, and he went into Jim's room. He would be there all night, and he would be there when Jim waked up in the morning. See, he would be there all night caring for Jim. He would be there in the morning when Jim woke up. Why? Because Jim was his son. That's what a father does. Something about the presence of a father that we long for. And the good news that we have in Jesus Christ is that we have it. He's with us. He's our father. Let's thank him.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.